the say-so of a voice on the phone? You'd never live it down. Especially not you, Edward. You'd be a laughing stock, eh? So, I'll see you in the morning at your consulting rooms, right? Should we say 10 o'clock? We'll forget about the past. Start afresh as patient and doctor. Clean slate. Perhaps even a reduced rate for an old friend. Now, what I suggest is just take a last look at the dead. I'm sure he'd like to take a peek. Go on, look at him. That's what awaits us all. Then, put the lid back on the coffin, shovel the earth back in the hole, and go home. Go home and try and get some sleep. If you can.
In A Call from the Dead, Edward Elmore was played by John Shrapnel and Stephen Warburton by Nick Dunning. The Reverend Neville Barber was Christopher Scott and Martha Elmore, Carolyn Jones. A Call from the Dead was written by Carey Harrison and directed by Sally Evans.
Oh, I like that. And next Sunday, there's a terribly inventive thriller from Julian Simpson that makes brilliant use of sound. It was rightly lauded for this at the BBC Audio Drama Awards a couple of years ago. I should know, I was there, not winning one. It's called Kokomo, it's a real treat, and has a brilliant cast, including the aforementioned Anna Ford Heard, Robert Glenister, who was in The Woman in Black just about an hour ago, and Tim McInerney, Louise Brealey, Hermione Norris, and Nicola Walker, who, as well as being a fabulous actress, is also the voice of this year's Seventh Dimension, don't you know? She's the lady who whooshes about saying, off you go. I can heartily recommend it, so have a listen to that.
You're leaving the Seventh Dimension.
See, that's her. It's Nicola Walker. Told you. Right, I'm being released into the wild. Well, the Seventh Dimension equivalent, which is, it's being ejected into space. It's all right. I'll float about aimlessly for a bit and return at about Christmas time. Yep, I used the C word. Sorry about that, but it's coming. Now, that is scary. Nearly as scary as the Twilight Zone, which is where you'll be parking next Saturday. But you might have picked up a hitchhiker, so it won't end well. And James Follett's classic The Silent Vulcan will be melding your mind, so keep your ears pointy in order to pick up the signals we send out next weekend in the Seventh Dimension. I'm Toby Haydock, which will one day be illegal, but for now, we're all just going to have to live with it. Goodbye.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 1 o'clock and it's Alan Smith here on 4 Extra, where we've some great drama with the omnibus edition of Love for Lydia next. Then we've a short story about a woman who remembers her old home, which is now a ghostly reflection of its former self. I Used to Live Here by Gillian Tyndall is at 2:15. And later we're in the Yorkshire Dales for Maya Farm, a story about Simon and his eccentric family. That's at 4. So let's start with the second omnibus edition of Love for Lydia by H.E. Bates, which is centred on Mr. Richardson, a young newspaper reporter who's been sent to the house of Lydia Aspen to try to find out about the recent death of Lydia's father. Today, Richardson decides to try cutting himself off from people, but eventually has to face his feelings.
I went through the entire summer in a sort of sterile and loveless vacuum, taking long walks through the fields, avoiding the roads and the places where my friends lived, venturing away from Evansford into unknown countryside. Then, one day, I came across a small farmstead and a figure I recognised.
Tom! Is that you? You're a long way from home.
Well, this is my farm. Dad bought it for me to set up on my own.
Only 60 acres, but it's got water in the house. Well, come on down and see. My God, we've missed you so much. Where have you been?
Oh, nowhere. Walking, mostly.
You always were one for that. If you're not doing anything, why don't you come and give me a hand? For a day or two, or as long as you like.
Well, yes. Well, why not?
I'd never have got this place straight without you!
And I'd never have got myself straight without you.
You look filthy.
So do you. Come on, let's go and get some tea.
Oh, you go. I'll just finish up here!
That you, Tom? Well, where did you come from?
I live here.
Really? Since when?
Last Thursday. Tom needed some help and I was at a loose end. It seemed a good idea.
Oh, I think Tom might have told me. How'd you like your tea?
Strong and sweet, please, Nancy.
Oh, I always forget the handle's hot. Where's Tom? Will he be back for tea?
Yes, he's just finishing off a patch of field.
I should have guessed he wasn't alone by the amount of work that's been done. It really is looking nice now.
Well, I've enjoyed helping. It's done me good.
Oh. It's wonderful the difference this bloke makes. We're going to paint the kitchen at the weekend.
You look as if a wash would do you good, the pair of you.
Oh, we bath every night.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. Oh, you must be starved. Would you like me to do you something to eat as I'm here?
Oh, please.
All right. I'll see what you've got in. Probably not very much, knowing you. It must be 2 or 3 days washing up here. You look tired.
Yes, I am, rather. That meal just about finished me off. I ate too much.
Did you see Tom's new car?
Yes, I did. I like it.
Did he tell you how he got it?
He said you bought the old one.
Well, she made him buy it. Didn't he tell you that?
No, who did?
Lydia. Put the cutlery in the box just there. She kept on at him till he bought the car from Blackie. She almost got old Miss Aspen to buy one too. It was all to get business. Their dish goes up there, just behind you. They say there's been a fearful battle going on up there. Did you know?
No, I didn't know. And up at where?
The Aspen house. Old Miss Aspen isn't capable anymore. And now Rollo is trying to edge Lydia out, and she's trying to edge him out. He's drinking the money away on the one hand, and heaven knows what she's doing. Probably drinking it away as well. They've had to sell some of the land, and there were awful death duties on Miss Juliana's will.
Who says she's been drinking?
Well, I didn't actually say that.
I suppose you'll be telling me next she's pregnant.
Well, not that I know of, but would it surprise you? After all, when you consider who her mother was.
And just who was her mother?
Well, I mean, everybody knows. Well, she's dead now, I think, but everybody knows. They say that...
I suppose you never met her?
Of course not, but I know what people say.
Well, perhaps people say too much.
Well, all I know for sure is that there's no smoke without fire. And people say she gets her ways from her mother. I mean, you've just got to get it from somebody, haven't you? Of course you don't see it. You men never do. But you mark my words, she'll go like her mother one day.
And what way is that?
The wrong way.
The following week, it was Nancy's birthday. Tom had driven into Evansford to fetch Lydia. I was always slightly on edge whenever I was alone with Nancy. That night I felt not only defensive, but strained and nervous inside. Nancy had nothing to do with my nervousness, though. That was due to the fact that I would be seeing Lydia for the first time in several months.
I want to ask you something.
Oh, what's that, Nancy? I've already blessed your declining years with a kiss.
All I want you to do is to promise to behave yourself. I just want you to behave with... well, some sort of balance. Otherwise the party will get lopsided and somebody will start feeling out in the cold. Anyway, I've arranged it so that Tom is partnering Lydia. That's what I want you to bear in mind.
Flares of excitement beat at the ache inside me as Lydia ran into the house. She lifted the Macintosh hood from her black hair and shook it free. A few drops of rain had settled on her face. She stood looking at me and didn't wipe them away.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
You look very well.
Get her a glass of sherry, you two. I don't want the gravy to go lumpy.
That's my job.
That's my job, I said, and a prolonged torment of nervousness went through me as I fumbled about among bottles and glasses. Meanwhile, it continued to rain with splendid summer savagery outside, drowning the sound of my sloppings as I poured sherry into glasses.
I'll never get you home in this. I think it's getting worse.
Lydia can stay here, Tom. You've got a spare bed.
What did I do with my gumboots?
In the scullery where you left them.
I'd better go and see if the McKechnies will let me use their telephone so that I can let Lydia's people know.
Thank you, Tom.
And Mum and Dad, while you're about it.
Shan't be long.
Who are the McKechnies?
Tom's neighbours.
I didn't know he had any.
They're odd people. Very religious. Scottish Presbyterian or something.
Nancy went up to make the bed and left Lydia and me alone. She was sitting on the floor, leaning back against the chair, holding her coffee cup on her lap. All about the house, the rain spun a web of sound that was more like a heightened and oppressive form of silence in which we had nothing to say to each other. She didn't look at me at all. At last, I couldn't bear it any longer. I took the empty coffee cup from her and bent down and kissed her. She put her hands against my shoulders, holding me back, her eyes indecipherably dark in the candlelight.
It's been terrible. I've missed you. When can we see each other again, like we used to be?
She seemed to think about it for some moments, letting her head fall softly to one side. All the same, I knew what her answer would be, and a shock of misery went through me.
We can't. Not anymore. Just because you kiss people, it doesn't mean you love them.
It isn't very long since you did love me.
Isn't it? I don't know.
How is it you don't know? Tell me.
I know I just don't. That's all. It isn't why or how or anything like that. It's something you know without thinking. You can't explain. People do all sorts of odd things and they never know why.
I expect you found out why with someone else. Perhaps with Blackie.
I felt terribly sorry for Blackie. I know you don't see it like I do, and probably you never will, but then you're not me and I'm not you, and so how could you? Don't be bitter. I'm not the first girl to think she loved people and made a fool of herself a few times before she found the right one. There's nothing odd, is there, in that?
Only something miserably and damnably and utterly painful for those who don't happen to be the right ones.
Yes, Dad, yes. Yes, I've told Lydia's people. Yes, yes. Good night, Dad. Oh, love to Mum.
You've made your call.
Yes, thank you.
I see there's a light in your house upstairs.
Oh, that would be Nancy making up the beds. She and Miss Aspen are going to stay the night.
Just the three of you?
And my friend. You might have seen him about the place. He's been helping me.
He's from round these parts?
Oh, yes. He used to work on the county paper. Their offices are in Evansford High Street. Well, I'd better be getting back to the others. Oh, let me pay you for the use of the telephone.
You owe me nothing. Good night to you.
Lydia gone up?
Yes.
Nice evening, wasn't it? And Lydia loved the house.
Yes.
Ooh, Not raining quite so fast now.
No, not so fast. You look as if you've got something on your mind.
Oh, not really.
Tom?
Oh, I don't know, just thinking about things. It's Lydia being here and seeing her again. Do you remember that night she asked Alex to run an errand?
She was always asking Alex or you or me to do something for her.
And we'd always do it.
What particular night are you talking about?
Her 21st party. Alex wouldn't go, and so she asked me. She sent me down to the garage with a note for Blackie. The place stank of grease and petrol, and there was the stepmother and Blackie yelling at each other while poor old Johnson was lying dead upstairs.
Ooh. Well, what's your point, Tom?
There isn't any point. It was just a horrible scene to come across. I've never forgotten it.
I take it you gave the note to Blackie?
Hmm. He was very curt. Tell her no reply, he said. I felt like some little messenger boy being dismissed. There was no conclusion to it, no answer to the note.
No answer?
No. I suppose that's why it's stuck in my mind all this time.
It wasn't fair of her to put you through that.
You'd have done it, wouldn't you? If she'd asked you.
That night, I was unable to sleep, knowing Lydia was so close by. I lay there for a long time, watching a sky from which all cloud and rain and lightning had miraculously departed, leaving behind it a sparkling range of stars. Then I heard voices and went to the window to look. A stream of light sprang from the kitchen door as Tom and Lydia walked together across the yard. I heard Tom clear his throat and say something nervously about the barley and the ploughing, and then I saw him silenced by an upward gesture of Lydia's arms as she began to kiss him. I walked away from the window and lay down on the bed. I stared up at the stars again and thought of Tom, stunned, joyous, blown explosively out of himself by the force of a new and tender wonder, remembering how it had been for me, and how it was still just as deep and just as strong, but now full of pain as well.
Ah, lovely morning. Everything's so fresh after all that rain. It washes everything so, well, clean, doesn't it?
Yes, I suppose it does.
You having breakfast?
No, I won't, thanks. Just coffee.
For a few eager days, Tom was lost in a world that contained nothing but Lydia. I withdrew myself from it with unobtrusive excuses that I don't think he even heard.
Ah. That should keep that old fox away.
Tom, I'm going to leave Evansford.
Oh, no. Why?
Well, there's a job in London, if I want it, and I've decided I do.
Well, you've taken me by surprise, I can't deny that. I had no idea you were thinking of leaving us. When are you planning on going?
In a few days.
I'll miss you.
Yeah, I'll miss you too.
A day or two later, I came out of the house to see Tom leaning heavily against the paddock gate, his gun at his side.
Good God! Whatever's the matter? You look dreadful.
I can't believe it. The oddest damn thing. I saw that old fox earlier on, less than 20 yards away. Anyway, I followed it onto the McKechnie land and just got it in my sights when old man McKechnie came roaring down the path after me like something possessed.
Here! I warn you, Tom Holland, just do stop right there. I've got one plain, simple, straightforward question to ask you, young man. What are your intentions towards Feely, my daughter? Well?
I'm sorry, Mr. McKechnie, I don't have the faintest idea what you're talking about.
You're a liar. A bare-faced liar.
Now, just you wait a minute. I repeat, I don't know what you're talking about, and I have no intentions of any sort towards your daughter. We had the most terrible row. I thought he was going to hit me.
So what have you done to Feely?
You wouldn't be laughing if you'd seen him. He was absolutely berserk, and I haven't done anything to Feely. You came into it too.
Me? What the devil have I done to Feely McKechnie?
You all came into it. Nancy and Lydia as well. He raved about you all.
Oh, bloody fool. Come on, Tom, forget about it.
But why? They've been so neighbourly. Old McKechnie's given me advice with the farm, and his wife and daughters have sent down food packages since I've been here. Oh, good God. I've just remembered. I know what's brought all this about. It was that day Feely came round with some cakes, and she'd cut off all her hair as some kind of protest against her father. He's very strict Presbyterian.
He whipped me. Father whipped me.
You mean just because you cut your hair?
All we do is work and have prayer meetings. I've never been to a dance or a cinema. We're not allowed music. We're not allowed anything.
Yeah. Don't cry. Have some tea. I think it's still hot.
I'll show you my back. I'll show you what he's done.
Oh, my God. Oh, you must put something on it. Some ointment, something.
I can't. I mustn't. If I'm beaten, I must bear it. It has to heal itself. Otherwise, it has no value.
We'll see about this. I'll get some ointment tomorrow. You can come down in the afternoon and put it on.
I better go now, or else they'll be looking for me, and they'll find the two of us together here.
That's what happened. I only wanted to help her.
Forget it, Tom. Don't let it bother you. It's too ridiculous for words.
That evening at about 7 o'clock, there was a knock at the door. When I answered it, Feely stood there with her sister Flora.
I've come to see Tom.
Tom's in Evansford.
Oh, walked there, did he?
I'm sorry.
His car's outside.
Well, what is it?
Nice thing, isn't it, when people tell lies? You can't get anywhere with people who tell lies.
I've got some things I want to say to you, Tom.
I think it's better if...
Oh, no, you don't. You're in this as well. We're going to have it all out in the open. That's why I've come here with my sister.
All what out in the open? I'm afraid you and your family have completely misunderstood things.
Tom has done nothing to your sister, as well she knows.
It's all right.
No, Tom, it isn't all right. You don't have to put up with this. It's insane.
Feely, for goodness sake, why don't you just tell the truth? Oh, but of course you can't now, can you?
This is what they do to you, Feely, if you give them a chance. Oh, well, what else can you expect from people who begin by lying and end by blaspheming?
Good. God!
There you are, you see? The devil's in this house. Father said so. You can be sure of that. Oh, we all know about the goings-on here.
I think this is finished. I'd like it if both of you would leave now.
Just who do you think you are? You're not the master here.
No, Tom is. And I'm not going to listen to you aim any more of your hideous accusations at my friend. Now, will you please go before I do or say something I'll regret?
Tom! Come away home, Feely. Leave the lion devils to their sinning and their debauchery.
Oh, my head hurts. I can't think. I'm just so glad you're here. Oh, I wish you didn't have to leave.
Two nights later, Bretherton rang me at home on the telephone my father had proudly had installed.
Do you know a girl named Feely McKechnie?
No.
Oh, I thought you did.
No.
Isn't she a friend of young Tom Holland's?
Not that I know of. Any reason for asking me?
She's missing.
Half an hour later, I bought a paper and caught the bus out of town to see Tom. Local girl missing was the headline on the front page.
He looks terrible. Are you sure he didn't promise that girl... I mean, was there anything...
No, there wasn't, Nancy. Nothing at all. He was being kind. It was nothing more than that.
I didn't think so.
Surely he told you.
No, he was fed up. He didn't want to talk about it.
And what would you two be plotting in here?
Well, thinking about doing something to cheer us all up. What do you say, Nancy?
I vote we get hold of Lydia and all of us go out for dinner. Or to the cinema or something and forget the whole nasty affair.
Now, that's the best idea yet. We haven't been out together for a long time and we can make it a farewell party.
Oh? Who's leaving?
I am.
He's off to London.
I see. I suppose everybody else knew but me, did they? I'm always the last to know anything. Couldn't you at least stay till this thing blows over?
It has nothing to do with me, or even Tom. Anyway, I'm sure you're right. We'll blow over once that fool McKechnie runs out of steam.
We hope. Surely London isn't what you intended for yourself. You don't belong there.
Nobody can stay in Evansford forever, Nancy. Even Feely left.
That dreadful girl must have had a reason for going.
She did. She cut off her hair and her father thrashed her.
Do you think she was in love with Tom?
Well, I'd think anything. Women get the queerest ideas about things.
So they do. I remember you telling me.
I'm telling you for the last time, if anything happens to that lassie, I'll hold you responsible. Before God, I will.
What on earth is going on here?
And we want no interference from your blaspheming gallivanting friends.
Come on, Tom, ignore him. The McKechnies drove her away. Let the McKechnies find her. Get out of my way.
Be careful, you'll make it worse.
And don't you go waving that stick at me.
Perhaps I can do something to help.
You've done enough.
Come on, Tom. You won't get through to them. They're beyond reason.
Now Tom had had a telephone put in, and I was glad of it. It made him seem less remote from us, should he need anything. I phoned Nancy and told her what had happened.
Where is he now?
He's all right. He's sleeping.
I'm not allowing him to spend another night out there by himself. He's coming home.
I don't know that he'll go for that, Nancy. He'd probably only worry that they'd do something to the farm if he wasn't there to keep an eye on things.
But you're there.
I am, but I'd like to go home again tonight. Can you come up?
Yes, all right. Oh, by the way, Lydia knows. About you, I mean.
When do you go?
At the end of the week.
Will you be away long?
All winter.
How's Tom?
Sleeping.
You're not leaving him here, are you? All alone?
No, Nancy's coming up.
Well, I think I should be going. I only wanted to say goodbye.
Wait with me till Nancy comes, and we'll walk back together.
It's a long way to walk.
Not if we take the footpath.
Dew lay wet on the bars of the gates and stiles as we walked home, and patches of white mist floated in the fields. When we reached the end of the footpath, Lydia took my arm, and we walked together until we came to the ancient iron gates of the park leading to the Aspen House.
Will you walk up with me? It's been so long since you've done that.
I could hear the leaves floating dryly down through the silence, and the days I had spent there came rushing back to me with pain. Lydia stopped and turned to me. She began to say something about wishing me luck. Then she came close to me, and I was kissing her. At last I let her go, and she held my face in both hands.
Have I been bad to you?
Yes, but then you warned me you would be.
You'd better go before the owls get you.
Or you.
I've got a queer feeling they will someday.
While her lips were still parted to frame the words, I kissed her again with a long, dry, empty pain. For the last time. I was reading in bed when the telephone rang.
Hello?
I'm sorry to disturb you so late.
It's all right, Nancy. What is it?
Tom's not in the house. There isn't a chance, is there, that he's with you?
No, he's not here.
Where do you suppose he can be? He was still asleep when I went to bed.
He's probably gone to have a pot at the Fox.
You sound annoyed.
I'm not annoyed. It's just cold. I came down without my slippers.
Then put them on before you catch a death. You do the silliest things.
Back in bed, I put the light out and tried to sleep, but I couldn't. I was worried by the way I had spoken to Nancy, and I began to be troubled by her anxiety about Tom and by recollections about the McKechnies. Suddenly, I was terrified for Tom. I got up, threw on some clothes, and started to cycle out to the farm. My bicycle lamp wasn't working, and so I went by the back streets.
Damn it!
I'd hardly gone any distance when I got a puncture. Besides which, there was the chance I'd be stopped over not having a light. I had no choice but to go back. We heard of Tom's death the next day. The police said he'd accidentally shot himself getting over a gate, just one of those things that could happen to anyone climbing over a gate at night with a gun. But I knew Tom better than that. He was never careless around guns. 3 days later, Feely McKechnie came back, and I left the next afternoon by the London train. It was more than 2 years later when I came back to Evansford. The Depression had hit the town badly, and my father, in his modest and generous way, had started a small choir to spread some cheer through the community.
There are 15 of us. Some of them were the old Orpheus. We sing at hospitals, concerts for charities, that sort of thing. We go to the sanatorium a lot. We feel it gives a lot of pleasure to people. Why don't you come and sing with us?
I can't read music. You know I can't.
It doesn't matter about that. You don't have to. Charlie McIntosh doesn't read. Will Purvis doesn't read. They're two of the best men we've got.
I don't know.
You've got a fine voice. Your ear is good.
It's been ages since I sang a note.
Actually, we want somebody to give out the sheet music when we sing at the sanatorium.
So that's it.
Peggy Whitworth always does it, but he fell down this morning and broke his leg. It was only his wooden one, though.
Couldn't you get someone else to do it?
I'm sure I could, but I think you'd like it. They give us a supper with coffee afterwards. We'll probably sing out of doors this evening, so you needn't come inside if you don't want to. It's a beautiful garden there, full of flowers, full of daffodils.
I will come again, my love, oh, 10,000 miles.
Excuse me, do you suppose you could sing She Moved Through the Fair? After supper, of course.
Yes, certainly we can. We'll be pleased to.
Thank you. Don't I know you?
Nora? My God! Nora Jepson, how are you?
Well, I'd like to say I'm very well, but as you can see, I'm in a sanatorium, so I can't be, can I? No need for glum looks. I'll probably be out by the end of the summer. It's so nice to see you. And what are you doing now?
Not much.
Oh, no dancing?
No dancing.
That was my trouble. Too much dancing. Where was that place we went to once? That funny little village.
Milton Posnet. They'd never seen anything like you.
Oh, I was a show-off.
I wouldn't say so.
Well, you're very sweet, but I was a show-off. A dreadful one. Oh, dear, talking to me, you've missed all the sandwiches.
That's all right, but I do have to go. I'm giving out the sheep music.
Well, come and see me again, won't you?
Yes, I'd like to.
Oh, don't forget. Oh, wait a minute, forget. God, forget, I'm the one forgetting. I knew I had something to tell you. There's a friend of yours here. She came in after Christmas.
A friend?
Lydia.
I walked across the lawn and felt myself shaking. The scent of daffodils floated, sweet and warm in the still air. And a blackbird was singing in the first touch of twilight. Dark and unsurprised, Lydia lay flat on a bed in one of the open huts and looked at me.
I heard you were home.
Lydia.
Who told you I was here?
I didn't know you were ill.
Who told you? Was it Nora? Have you seen Nora?
Yes, it was Nora.
You didn't come and see me before you left. You didn't even come to Tom's funeral.
I couldn't come.
Not even to see me.
When I felt you didn't want me.
We all wanted you. He sings all day now. He wakes me in the morning and I lie here and listen to him before they bring my breakfast. We had a terrible binge, Nora and I. 2 years of it, we just burnt ourselves out. She's a terrific person when you get her going. Tremendous vitality. She lasted longer than I did. Dr. Baird says she'll be out soon. I don't believe you're listening.
I am. I'm listening.
Don't look so far away, then. There's no need to be so gloomy. It's not as if I'm going to die or anything. I very nearly did, though. You know, I always said the owls would get me one day. Very nearly did this time.
Please don't say that.
Well, whether I say it or whether I don't, it makes no difference. It's true anyway. I went down and down, right to the bottom. It's right down beyond everything, where nobody was. Just nobody. There was nobody to be with me.
I'd been thinking about what Nancy had said about Lydia going the same way as her mother. When I turned to look at her again, I saw that she was crying. Because she lay so flat, the tears did not fall away from her face. They made two pools in the dark sockets of her eyes, separate at first, and then joining together. Her hands, as she lifted them from under the coverlet, were like two casts of colourless plaster.
Don't be frightened. You won't catch anything. Come and hold me for a minute. What there is of me.
Lydia.
No, you mustn't kiss me. This won't do at all. If Dr. Baird or Nurse Simpson find you here, you'll have to go. You really... You will. Come and see me another day, will you?
You know I will.
Often. Promise. I shall hate you if you don't. You know, if you're nice to Dr. Baird, he might let you come in any day. See if you can get Nora to introduce you. He's very sweet on Nora.
I'll bring you some flowers.
Oh, will you? Oh, that would be nice. That's just like you. You were always a great one for flowers.
So what did you think of the visit to the sanatorium? I saw you talking to quite a few people.
I enjoyed it.
Oh, does that mean I can count you in for our next performance?
When is it?
Next Tuesday. You're not doing anything else, are you?
Not as far as I know.
I'll bet you could never guess where we're singing.
No, where?
Well, it's quite a little honour. We're going to sing for Miss Aspen, the old lady up at the house.
Well, Miss Bertie?
Yes, Miss Bertie. I'd forgotten you used to visit there. I'd forgotten that.
God, a long while ago.
Well, not so long.
Oh, it seems so.
Anyway, they say she's going downhill fast. As for Rollo, they struck his name off the Liberal Club last month. He's been banned from the Prince Albert, too. Mm. Yeah, they say he's soaking every penny of the place away.
Well, there's plenty to soak away.
Is there? They lost a good deal in the crash. Besides, it's not always the people who look as if they've got it. Often it's the opposite. Look at Luther Jolly. He wore the same straw hat for 40 years. He picked up stub ends in the gutter. He left a fortune.
Yeah, but the Aspens go back at least 500 years.
The longer you're here, the longer you have to spend it. Drink is one of the surest ways to spend it. And stock market crashes, one of the surest ways to lose it. And the Aspens have done both.
It was only when we gathered on the terrace to sing under the windows of the bedroom where Miss Bertie lay that I noticed how bare the conservatory had become. We waited for about 20 minutes for Rollo. When he came, at last, he had the unbalanced, dusty, button-eyed appearance of a molting bird, stuffed and somehow reanimated and brought from behind the glass of its case. He stood blinking for some moments, his small dark eyes bloodshot and dazed. Then he hovered among us with fumbling courtesies. The sleeves of his jacket had frayed at the edges and been shortened and bound with strips of leather.
Sorry to keep you. Frightful business. Oh, plum awful. Heavy batch of letters to get away. Plum awful. I call it damn decent of you chaps to come.
Not at all. Yeah.
Damn decent. Well, fire away then. Off you go.
What do you think Miss Aspen would like to hear?
Any damn thing. Loud, though. She's getting cheesy in the ears up there.
Well, I suggest that we sing a few of the things we like ourselves, yeah. And then perhaps you could go up and ask her if there's anything that she would especially like.
Good idea. Damn good idea.
I sat on the wall at the end of the terrace listening to the men's beautiful voices. During this time, Rollo did not appear again, and there was no sign from the house that anyone could be listening. I began to be haunted by an impression that the house was empty, that all its life had faded away, and that my father's little choir was singing to itself.
Mr. Richardson? Oh, my word. It is you, isn't it?
Yeah, hello, Lily. It's been a long time. I'm looking for Rollo. Have you seen him?
No, I don't know where Mr. Rollo is.
Oh, I wonder, would you run up and ask Miss Bertie if she's enjoying the singing and if there's anything special she'd like to hear?
Oh, look, get out of here, you great brute. Go on. Go on. Good boy.
Would you do that?
Sorry, Mr. Richardson, you were saying?
Would you go up to Miss Bertie? Perhaps she has a favourite song. It doesn't matter if she hasn't. It's just that they'd like to sing some little thing to please her.
Me? Oh, no, I can't do that. She doesn't let anybody in there. You could try. You could go up. She often used to talk about you.
Who is it?
Miss Bertie?
Who is it, please?
I've come
to... Will you say who it is?
It's me, Mr. Richardson.
Who? Who did you say? Who?
May I come in, Miss Bertie?
Will you say who it is, please?
Miss Bertie, I've come from the choir to ask you if there is anything you wish them to sing. It's Richardson, Lydia's friend. May I come in?
You may not. You may certainly not. Have you seen Lydia?
Yes.
How is she?
She's getting better, I think.
You think? You think?
And I'm sure she is.
Who sent you up here? Was it Lily? Why is she still here? I told her to go.
Have you enjoyed the singing, Miss Bertie?
Oh, yes. It was kind. It was very kind.
Was there any song you wanted them to sing?
No. There is nothing I want.
All right, Miss Bertie. Thank you. Goodbye.
Tell the choir it was very good of them to come.
On the terrace below us, I could hear the voices of the men talking to each other, and in the background, the call of birds in the still evening across the park. Before long, the clovered smell of drying grass would drench the air with the sweetness of high summer. But all I could smell as I stood outside Miss Bertie's door was the fustiness of a bedroom that had not been opened for a long time. I went downstairs, pursued by impressions of an intense loneliness. The sanatorium was very full that summer, and when I went again to see Lydia, I was one of a long stream of Sunday afternoon visitors carrying flowers.
Oh, there you are. How nice.
Hello, Mr. Richardson. How are you?
Hello, Blackie.
You're not to call him Blackie. His real name is Bert.
That's all right, Mr. Richardson. Everybody still calls me Blackie.
Then they mustn't. I'm going to convert them. Oh, more flowers. Yellow irises. Aunt Bertie loved them so. Did you see Aunt Bertie? You see, I know where you've been.
Yes, I saw her.
How is she? She wrote me a long letter about the singing.
She's well. I think she's well.
You think? Is she or isn't she? You saw her, didn't you?
No, I talked to her through the door.
What was that horror Rollo doing? On a blinder again?
I think so.
You think so? You mean he was? Why do you always have to say you think so?
Thinking is a thing I go in for sometimes.
That's exactly like you. Now, sit down, both of you, and in a few minutes they'll bring us tea. Oh, we'll have to tell them there are three now, not two. Bert, find Nurse Simpson, there's a dear.
Yes, Miss Aspen.
Oh, wait a minute. It'd be nice if we could get Nora over. Ask Nora if she'll come over. They let her now. He's comic, isn't he? I think he's enormously comic. He comes every Wednesday and every Sunday. He has done all through, all the time.
It's very nice of him.
Isn't it awfully queer sometimes how people change? You wouldn't think he was the same person, would you? As soon as he heard I was ill, he started to come to see me. Except for the first few weeks when Dr. Bird wouldn't let me have anybody. How do you account for that?
Well, you encouraged him.
I didn't encourage him. I've done all I can not to encourage him.
You've lent him money.
I did not. Where on earth did you hear that? I offered to lend him something and he wouldn't take it. That was what the trouble was that night at Ashby when you stormed out and wouldn't wait. If only you'd waited. Alex always used to say that about you, about how you storm off. Pass me my brush, would you? I'd better try and tidy myself a bit if Nora's coming over. Oh, see how my hair comes out in handfuls. I throw it outside and the birds take it for their nests. That's a thought, isn't it?
It's a very nice thought.
Oh, you would say that. Ah, Dr. Baird. This is a gathering of old flames.
Then damp the flames down or put them out altogether. Nora, you have to stay for half an hour, no longer.
Yes, sir, Dr. Baird.
Don't worry, Lydia. You'll soon be up and about too.
She's got to go carefully.
Yes, all right, thank you, Bert.
Blackie stared at Lydia, steadfastly, hopefully, with patience. Like a dog trained out of a puppyhood of snarling resentments into a calm obedience that had the same touching, inexpressible canine devotion. Even when he was shaken out of this by Nora saying that she had gained 7 or 8 pounds in weight and demonstrated by holding her frock midway up her thighs how the shape of her legs was coming back, fuller and nicer even than before, I felt he looked at her less for herself than because he saw in her body the approaching pattern of Lydia's. I felt he longed for the day when she too would walk in the grounds in the sun and hold up her dress to show that the grace of her body was coming back.
You are. That's not true. This is true. You
it's time, young lady. Come on.
Already?
Already.
It hasn't been half an hour yet.
Yes, it has. Now come along, say your goodbyes.
See how bossy he is. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, Nora. See you again.
Be good.
She has a choice.
Thank you for coming.
You leaving too, Bert?
Yes, Miss Aspen. I'll see you on Wednesday.
I look forward to that.
Goodbye, Blackie.
You must be tired.
No, no, not at all. You never know, I might be up when you come one day. And if I am, I want you to be the first to see me. I want my legs to be nice again, like they used to be. Do you remember? You used to say my legs were nice.
All of you was nice.
Oh, don't say that. I think I shall cry if you say that.
I should go too.
Not yet.
Yes, you need your rest.
All I do is rest.
And so you should until you get stronger.
Spoilsport. Oh, very well. Come back soon.
Can I run you home, Mr. Richardson?
Yes, thanks, Blackie.
What do you make of her?
How do you mean?
Will she be all right? I keep trying to get hold of Dr. Baird to ask him, but you know how they are, doctors.
Well, if Nora's anything to go
Nora's
by...
Nora's different. Nora's not the same. You can't go by Nora. After Mr. Holland died, that's when it all started. After that, she rang me up and I was glad of the business, very glad of it. There was hardly a night went by when she wasn't hiring the car to go out dancing with Nora.
Blackie told me the whole story about the dancing, the rowdiness, the drinking, even a drunken strip on the dance floor. He didn't mention men, but there must of course have been men. Then he told me about the night she appeared, staggering and half-supported by Nora, until she lurched forward and fell into the road. He picked her up and tucked her up with rugs beside Nora and drove them carefully home. After he'd dropped Nora off, he took Lydia home and carried her into the house.
I didn't leave. Not until I was sure she was all right. She frightened me that night. I didn't think at first she was going to come round. When she did, she didn't seem to know where she was, and she kept asking for Mr. Holland. She needed somebody to take care of her. There was nobody in that house that could do that. Do you think she'll be all right?
Yes, she will. She'll be all right.
Every time I go up there, I'm frightened. Frightened she won't be there anymore.
One Sunday I couldn't go to see her, and the next week Blackie was sitting waiting for me in the Chrysler. When I walked up to the gate, he leapt out of the car.
I'm glad you could come, Mr. Richardson. She didn't talk much last week. She always seems brighter somehow when you're here. You know what to say to her.
Not today, at least not both of you together. Just one if you like, and then only for 3 minutes, that's all.
What is it, Dr. Baird?
No need for alarm. These things happen sometimes.
You go in. I'll wait here.
It was nice of you to bring flowers.
Blackie sent them.
Oh. Didn't you bring any?
The drought has withered everything up.
Including me. Blackie always remembers, doesn't he?
He'd rather die than not remember.
No crying now. Come on. We've had enough of tears, haven't we?
I'm sorry, nurse.
You'd better go.
I'm terribly sorry.
How is she?
Not well, Nora.
Come and sit in the shade for a minute.
I'd better not. Blackie's waiting. What happened to start all this?
It's a relapse. Dr. Baird says it's normal in this type of case.
Is she all right, nurse?
You should never have come in. She worked herself up into a state because you didn't come last Sunday. And now you come this Sunday and start it all over again.
From then on, I saw her whenever I could. I was to blame in part for her relapse. It had frightened me, and I resolved not to let it happen again.
Oh, thank you. What lovely flowers.
So how's the patient today?
Nora told me about Nurse Simpson. She shouldn't have spoken to you like that.
No, I deserved it. It made me think.
You and your thinking. Come, sit beside me.
You gave us quite a scare. Poor Blackie was beside himself.
And you?
Me too.
I was going to be walking by summer, wasn't I? But here I still am. I don't get on very fast, not like Nora.
You've got your own pace, Lydia. It isn't meant to be a race, you know.
They'll probably get engaged. Dr. Baird and Nora. Did you know that? They'll want to announce it at Christmas or the New Year. Nobody knows that except me. And now you.
She looked at me in a puzzled, reflective way. I thought for a moment, uneasy and a little troubled, that she was going to ask me if I loved her. And I knew if she did so, I should not know the answer.
Won't you kiss me? That makes me feel better.
She smiled. She needed love from me that afternoon, and the pain of not being able to give it to her hurt me more than if I had given it and she had turned away.
Mr. Richardson, you're early away. There's no need to keep to the clock if you don't want to.
Oh, I didn't want to tire her, Dr. Baird, especially after...
That was different. She'd missed you.
I know.
You could come up every day if you felt inclined. You don't seem to understand what's the matter with her. You don't seem to grasp that she's terribly lonely, do you?
I think so.
You think so? Don't you realise she's got nobody else in the world but you and that taxi fellow? It's time you woke up to that.
I knew what he was trying to say. I remembered how I had been so much in love with Lydia that I couldn't eat for happiness. And I remembered, too, how badly hurt I had been when she took her love away. I couldn't explain all this. I felt only a screen of protection rise and harden inside me against the possible renewal of a deeper, harsher pain.
Look, I'll tell you this. I warn you clearly and plainly, if she doesn't get the thing she wants, she won't be there when you come up one day. I'm sorry, old man. I blow up easily about these things. I'm most awfully sorry. Listen, there's going to be a New Year's Eve dance here. Let's see if we can work her up to that. You used to be awfully fond of dancing, I believe. I think it would be a good idea, don't you?
Yes, I do. Could she go for a drive?
Yes, why not? Let's aim for the drive first, and then the dancing. Anything that's going to make the future real and living for her.
That's what I thought.
A future for Lydia. That's what we have to keep in mind.
On the last Sunday of November, Blackie and I walked for a short distance, one on each side of Lydia, up and down the path outside. She wore a long crimson dressing gown to hide her thin legs. It was the first of several walks to get her ready for the promised drive we anticipated would be before Christmas. But then, old Miss Bertie died. Lydia took the death of her aunt very quietly, in a meditative way that made me recall my notion that the Aspen sisters had been like two trees keeping each other up.
She missed Aunt Juliana. She never had anyone to prop her up again. She never got over that. Now there's only Rollo and me. And there very nearly wasn't me.
snow began to fall on the day we took Lydia for her outing. When we drove out into the country at about 2 o'clock, Blackie insisted that Lydia and I should sit in the back, and he tucked us up, as his father used to do, with elaborate care, under 4 or 5 rugs, fussing continually.
You sure you're all right? You sure you don't feel any cold? Make her tell me if she's cold, won't you, Mr. Richardson? The one thing she mustn't do is get cold.
I'm quite warm.
And does that rug cover her legs?
Oh, Bert!
All right, I'll leave you in peace.
Blackie's right. We mustn't let you catch a chill.
Feel me. Feel my hands.
They're warm.
That's how I feel. Melting and warm. Thawing out and living again. When you've nearly died once, it's funny how it doesn't frighten you so much. Did you know that?
No, Lydia, I didn't know that.
I'd have thought you would have. You're always so good at knowing how people felt. You had a way of guessing. Stop that. Let's stop here. It's so lovely. Look, there's ice by the brook. You can see where the birds have been across it. We ought to see if it bears.
I'll go.
I want to ask you something.
Yes?
I kept having a queer feeling that some part of you wasn't here. Do you know what I mean?
Come on! It's fine!
Lydia, look, Blackie's waving at us. I think it bears. I'll go and see.
Well, I'm coming too.
I held her hand while she picked her way through the snowy grass. Blackie came running across the meadow to hold her other hand. She laughed, shaking her dark hair free from her face in the wintry sunlight. When we reached the ice, she suddenly shook her hands free from us.
Let me go on alone. I want to do it alone.
We let her go forward across the ice by herself. I saw then how thin her legs were, thin and fleshless, and unsupple from long illness, as clumsy as on the first day I had taken her skating.
Be careful, are you all right? Let me come and help you.
No, no, don't come. I'm all right. I want to do it alone.
We stood watching her as she moved about the ice alone. Her face shone with excitement, and her hair fell long and dark about her shoulders. I remembered once again the afternoon I had first taken her skating, and I remembered Tom and his appearance of staggered wonder when she smiled at him. And then, afterwards, the weeks of skating and the walking home after dark through the streets of frozen snow.
Here I come! Somebody catch me! Oh, 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 my legs are like jelly. I think I'm going to fall.
Oh. Blackie rushed to her side and picked her up very gently, as if she were the most precious thing on earth, and carried her stiffly and proudly and with great care back to the car.
That was wonderful. Wonderful. Skating, that's something, isn't it? It means I'm getting better and soon I'll be dancing too. Are you coming to the dance? You are, aren't you?
If you want me to.
Oh, I want it more than anything. You'll dance with me a lot, won't you? Say you will.
Yes, Lydia. I'll dance with you a lot.
As long as my poor legs can hold me.
What about Blackie? You should ask him too.
Yes, I'll ask him. Of course I will. Couldn't you look at me sometimes? Just a bit? Must you always keep your head up there?
I'm sorry.
You're miles away.
I smiled at her, trying to show in my face some expression that seemed spontaneous. But the feeling that I had no love to give her, and did not know why, that some part of myself had been driven away, perhaps destroyed forever, was behind everything I did and said and felt.
Is she behaving herself?
She is.
How's the champagne?
We shall need some more for the great announcement. When's it to be?
During the supper interval.
Oh, good. We might have time for another dance.
Don't overdo it.
I won't. Anyway, I feel marvellous.
See that you don't.
What about Blackie?
What?
Well, don't disappoint him. He wants to dance with you.
I'll dance with him after supper.
His feelings will be hurt if you don't.
Yes, yes. I'll be able to leave here very soon. Perhaps in a month. Are you glad?
Yes, I'm glad.
Well, you don't sound as if you are. You sound as if you don't care.
No, not at all. I was just wondering how you'd find things back at the house. With no one there but Rollo.
I'm not going back. I'm never going back there again.
Well, where will you go?
I wanted to ask you that.
Well, first of all, a rest. A month of convalescence by the sea.
What a nice idea. Would you come too?
Ladies and gentlemen, there will now be an interval for supper. But first, there's something I want to tell you all. I think it's been an open secret for quite a while now, but anyway, I just want to make it official here tonight, on this last night of the old year, that Nora here has consented to be my wife.
As we held up our glasses to Nora and Dr. Baird, wishing them happiness, it reminded me of the time when Lydia and Tom and Nancy and Alex and his mother and myself had danced together, also on New Year's Eve, and toasted each other, also with champagne.
I hope you'll be the first to come and stay with us, you two.
Still half lost in the thought of Alex, and how that night in our headstrong stupidity we had hated Blackie, I didn't answer.
He means us, silly. You're not listening again.
No, I am, I'm listening. Thank you very much.
You haven't kissed Nora.
I dutifully kissed Nora. Then Baird kissed Lydia. At this point, somebody remembered Blackie, a slightly self-conscious odd man out, waiting to be noticed when the rest of us thought fit. A rush of pity came over Lydia, and with impulsive charm, she took his face in her hands, kissing him.
Oh, Bert. I want to kiss everybody tonight. I'm so happy.
I made some excuse and went out, leaving her there with Nora and Dr. Baird and Blackie. I felt very much as I had done on the night Alex had died, stubborn and upset. It was still snowing. Flakes that were soft and blown and shining made a line of wetness where they ended on the gleaming bricks of the terrace. I'd been there 5 minutes or more when Lydia opened the glass doors and came out to look for me.
I thought I'd lost you.
You shouldn't come out here, Lydia. It's cold.
I'm all right. I've got a cloak on. One of the nurses lent it to me.
Do you remember the first day we went skating? You had one on then. Just the same.
Oh, it all seems so long ago. And yet it isn't. It's just that so many things have happened.
Yes.
Oh, your hands are cold. Come inside my cloak. That's right. Put your arm around me. You didn't answer my question.
What question was that?
About the sea. Would you come with me to the sea? You will, won't you?
I can't come with you.
Why did you say that?
I can't come with you.
Do you mean you don't want to come with me?
It isn't that.
You do love me, don't you?
The directness of the question I had feared so long and didn't want to answer struck something inside me that seemed to burst like a fester. I felt my entire body swamped by bitter surges of intolerable pain.
If you don't love me, please say so. I could understand it.
How?
How could you understand it?
Because it was how I got in here. It was because of you. And all the things I did to you. It's Rollo. He lets them out every night. You can hear them all across the fields.
As the sound of barking across the snow increased, it occurred to me that the pain of love might be part of its flowering. I hadn't grasped that the love I felt for Tom and Alex had so much to do with my love for Lydia. With inconceivable stupidity, I'd shut it out from fear of being hurt by its unacceptance. I hadn't grasped that I'd made her suffer.
Will you forgive me for the awful, terrible things I did? I thought of you every night when I lay there, at the bottom of things. After Tom died, there was no one there. And I wanted you.
The slow breaking of her voice into tears seemed to wake me at last. Folding myself into the nurse's cloak against her, I shut out the snow, the darkness, and the raw barking of Rollo's dogs across the park. A flake or two of snow fell on my head and on her face as she lifted it up to me.
Will you come with me to the sea?
Holding her, I felt I could hear the sound of the sea rising out of new distances. With happiness, I remembered Tom and Alex, the winters and the summers, the snow and the dancing, the young and the dead. Staring through the snow, I could feel already the warmth of the spring beyond it, the time of the blackbird, and the lovely April weather.
Love for Lydia by H.E. Bates was dramatised by Vivian Allen and starred Tim Pigott-Smith, Juliet Aubrey, Jordan Frieda, Jamie Bamber, Claire Corbett, Tom Mannion, Tracy Wiles, Isabel Joss, Philip Fox, Helen Longworth, Margaret Tysack, Robert Purdy, Tom Calder and Nidhi Delfatti. The producer was Tracy Neal. Next week, we've the continuing adventures of former spies Josephine Daunt and Susan Dervish and their detective agency, Daunt and Dervish. And this time, as the country prepares to crown the new queen, the ladies accept an invitation for tea at Claridge's. Daunt and Dervish is at this time next week. Two giants of the American theatre confront their troubled pasts in Radio 4 Extra's drama. After 10 years of estrangement, Arthur Miller and Elia Kazan are forced to confront their intense friendship and how it was derailed by the great moral and political dilemma of the time. When Kazan named names to the House Un-American Activities Committee out of fear of being blacklisted by Hollywood, the two men didn't speak for over 10 years. They were reunited when a struggling Miller agreed to let Kazan direct his new play After the Fall.
Lots put the whole McCarthy anti-communist thing in the play. I'm in it as a character named Mickey, who does on the stage pretty much what I did in real life that caused so much trouble and made everyone hate me. It's the second act, when the character of Maggie burns up the stage, the play really comes alive. I'm in awe of Art's writing here, his unflinching honesty, the way he digs into himself, his past, his pain. The second act is all Marilyn, because whatever Art says, Maggie is Marilyn Monroe. He's thrown it all in. A public marriage going sour, love curdling to contempt, hysteria, obsession, addiction, suicide attempts. It's just electric.
Memories of Marilyn Monroe and the McCarthy hearings evoke an era of American history. Art and Gadge. On Wednesday morning at 11:15 and again in the evening at 9:15.
Classic comedy on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
More tea, Tub? Thank you, William, yes. Use the strainer this time. Do hate tea leaves floating about. Doesn't matter which way you turn the cup, they follow you round. Okay, do you want any more omelette Yugoslavian? No, thanks, I'll make do with the cornflakes Mediterranean. What's that? That's with milk on them. Oh, well, what cornflakes do you want? The already sugared ones or the ones you put sugar